As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras, and now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you experience effortless healing, awakening, and abundance. In today's episode, we talk about some really amazing topics such as meditation, intermittent silence, how to awaken the inner consciousness within, influences from ancient wisdom such as the Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, and Krishna, and most importantly, understanding the perspective of a doctor when it comes to wellness and spirituality. So make sure that you listen till the very end, because we've got some really important nuggets of wisdom that you can use in your life. So if you'd like to explore these topics in your car, or maybe even if you're at home, if you're working from home, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button on your Apple device, or if you're listening to this on Spotify, then make sure you hit follow, because that does something special to the algorithm that allows our podcast to come in front of people who would never listen to our show or never know about our show. So do your part, hit subscribe or hit follow. All right. And if you'd like to join the official Facebook for this podcast, then make sure that you go to mysevenchakras.com/tribe. That's mysevenchakras.com/tribe, where we have all the exclusive discussions and sessions of when it comes to breathwork and yoga. So make sure you join our Facebook group. And with that being said, let's bring on our special guest for today, Dr. Krishna Bhatta, who is a surgeon, author, and an inventor, currently working as chief of urology at Eastern Maine Medical Center in Maine. Dr. Bhatta is both practical and spiritual. He developed a fascination with spiritual studies early in his life and has authored a book titled Journey from Life to Life, Achieving Higher Purpose. He also is the creator of Relax app that focuses on intermittent silence, meditation, and the art of high energy living. And he says, our physical body, energy body, and friendly mind help us know our flame, our consciousness. So some really amazing topics to explore on today's session. So Dr. Krishna, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Ajay, I will call you Ajay. And I know your name is Aditya, so it's wonderful to meet you. And it's great to be here.
Wonderful. And are you ready to inspire?
That is my job. I like to be inspired, and I inspire people. I always say my work inspires me, my patients inspire me, my colleagues inspire me, and that's how life should be.
Wonderful. And we usually start off our show with any inspirational quote. So is there a quote on your mind right now, and how do you apply that quote in your life?
So Ajay, the quote is very simple. Long time ago, 5,000 years ago, you mentioned about Gita and Krishna and Arjun. So Arjun asked Krishna a question. How do I control my mind, which is wavering and wandering and all the time? And Krishna said a simple answer, practice, Arjun, practice. So I use that and I advise your listeners to do that as well. So practice what? I mean, like you practice the show, we practice tennis to become good tennis player. Here we are going to talk about practicing intermittent silence, meditation, and that on a regular basis.
Wonderful. And I really, really admire and respect the practice of practice or the idea of practicing. I mean, if I go to my first few episodes, sometimes I feel shy. I don't even want to go to my first five episodes because I deep down know how much I've evolved as a communicator, as a host. But it's true, you know, practice is one thing that makes us closer and closer to perfection. There's also another quote from the Bhagavad Gita, which says, and I think Krishna says, do not be too attached to the result, only focus on the actions, because you have no right over the results, but what you have control over is the actions that you take in your practice, right? Something along those lines, but
something along those lines. We can talk about it if you know, in later on. I vary slightly from the conventional explanations,
right?
Because result is important.
Absolutely, it's important to monitor results from time to time.
Yeah, cool.
We can definitely dive into it. But before diving into that aspect of philosophy, I was hoping to start from the very beginning. Maybe you can tell us where were you born and what was your childhood like?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have heard the state of Bihar. So there is a small village and I was born there. And actually, I went to the school in the village. And it was a good school. All the teachers were good, and my friends and everybody, the whole company. And it was fun growing up. But growing up, one thing was there. My father was very fond of Gita, and he did his PhD from London School of Economics, you know, a long time ago in 50s. But he wanted to come back to India and teach other people. And at that time, I didn't appreciate Bhagavad Gita. I didn't appreciate there were all these saints coming to our house and all these educated or, you know, influencers coming to our house. But, you know, as teenager, we didn't care about it. And here I am. I love that book. And with any passion, it can be. So that was the high school and the college days. Then, of course, we left home and went to medical school. And that's when I got this fascination of doing meditation. And there were two or three of us who were kind of rebels, you know, we'll wear orange or wear white and meditate in the medical school fields while other people were doing other things. It was interesting growing up then, But continued, life continued, and we pursued our medical career, of course.
Yep.
So, Krishna was a mainstream person. I want to be a mainstream person. I don't want to leave life and go and do something else. I want to do both of it together. So that's how, it shapes up to now.
Wonderful, wonderful. And also before progressing, I'm curious, as a child, you said that certain ideals did not appeal to you, maybe the Bhagavad Gita or the Mahabharata when you were a kid. So what about that did not appeal to you that changed later on as you were an adult?
So Ajay, I don't know if you have children or not. Sometimes, when you say something to the kids, it seems like they're ignoring it and they don't, they're not listening to it. I was that child at that time, and but things were sinking in. Maybe I didn't understand the value or the importance, but of course, something must have sunk in, right? So as a parent also, I kept doing that, to the kids. Mm. It sounded like they didn't listen to me, but probably they, it will show up somewhere after they have finished their, building up their career.
Absolutely. And the reason why I ask this question is because when I was a kid, my grandfather, who is now deceased, had told me about the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata, and he said that if there's something that you can do in your lifetime is to read this. And so, just like you pointed out, something sank within me. It sort of didn't make sense back then. But as you know now, I'm all about yoga. I'm all about Ayurveda, Tantra, and of course, wanting to learn more and more about Krishna and Rama. So it's fascinating how that thing can sink in like a seed, which then germinates or manifests many years later. So Krishna, in your life, what sort of influence did your family have on you as a child? Were there any spiritual influences?
Yeah, as I mentioned, my father was, of course, you know, he was professor of economics and principal, but he was deeply rooted into Gita. And, you know, we grew up like a Brahmin family. So there were many rituals that happened. And of course, you know, you can object to rituals, but, you know, they all the rituals have some meaning behind them. And if you can get to understand them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was influenced. My mother, of course, she was a housewife, but she was always a provider. And, you know, it's like a wonderful being. And all those things, you know, they matter. They matter how you grow, where you grow. I think it matters a lot. In my book, you know, Journey from Life to Life, you know, I have mentioned this thing that when we grew up in India, every time you go, you know, in the village or anywhere, people get hurt in their knee and they will say, oh, this is one of my karma, you know, that I did, bad thing I did is gone. Or this is from my past life. You come to USA or England, nobody talks about past life. You know, I mean, it's just not in the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying one is bad or one is good, but, you know, it's just where you grow up, how you grow up, you know, and what the surroundings are matter. And fortunately, I had a lot of opportunities to be exposed, even though I may not have understood the value, as you mentioned yourself.
Right, right. That's so fascinating because even like I came to Canada about 6 years back. I was born and brought up in Mumbai. And I grew up in a Hindu family. So my dad is a Hindu, mom is a Christian. So I was exposed to both, you know, aspects and ways of living, right? And so I know that there were certain routines and traditions which did not make sense to me back then, but now it does because I'm curious to know the why. So just going to the temple, ringing the bell, my dad used to tell me that there are certain vibrations that are created that influence the mind. You know, certain homas that we do when we burn the fire, the significance of that. And so now I'm asking these questions and luckily there are answers and you can blend the science with the spirit and it becomes so interesting. So, you know, it's very fascinating.
It's funny you mentioned that because at least one of your parents was Christian or is Christian.
Yeah.
My father took me to several churches. So I have been to church, sat down and, you know, follow the routines and just to experience and also to expose that, you know, I mean, probably by that he meant that, yes, you know, there is value to all of these schools.
For sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm just curious. I mean, I know that spirituality plays a large part in your life, at least right now. But as a kid, did you have any spiritual experiences growing up as a child or as an adolescent, something that happened or something you noticed that didn't quite make sense or maybe still doesn't make sense?
No, I mean, those things happen. And there's a word called minor explosions, you know, so in spiritual path, I mean, there is a, you know, we feel like one day you will get enlightened before that, you know, there is nothing. Yeah. But, you know, the spiritual experiences, especially when you meditate, they happen in different form, you know, I mean, not necessarily at the time of meditation, but you may feel like full of energy someday, you know, just you don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Or some, I mean, one of the shloka in Gita, and I thought it can't be true. It says, if you follow a spiritual path, I mean, it talks about Nishkam Karma, you will have fewer obstacles. Your path will be smoother. And how do you compare that? Because you don't know what it would have been without it.
I
truly now believe that, yes, if you follow, I mean, if you just do practice meditation for a month, you will find that you suddenly the whole universe is trying to align with you. And I'm not I mean, it's not scientific proof for that.
Yeah.
But anecdotal or experiential proof is there then. And that's what I feel. I mean, yes, of course, we grew up with different customs and puja in the house, you know, like routine that happens in any Hindu family.
I love the term that you used called minor explosions. And through that, I think you implied that spiritual awakening does not have to happen suddenly. It's not necessarily that it happens suddenly and your Kundalini energy is rising up, although that might happen. Sometimes it might have happened gradually, step by step, over the years, slowly but surely. And that's wonderful. I think that happened to me as well. It's just these small, minor explosions that you experience from time to time. Just a surge of energy sometimes, which might be an awakening by itself.
And you wish it stayed with you, right?
That's so true.
I mean, that's the one difference, you know, having total enlightenment is that you are in that state all the time. Minor explosions experience in those things, but they go away.
Right. And you mentioned a while back that you were born in a small village, then you attended Patna Medical College, then you continued your education in the UK. What sort of challenges did you face back then? I mean, jumping from a place in India to UK, did you face any challenges at all?
These are all challenges, but I mean, that's the age for challenges, right? You want to beat the challenge or meet the challenge.
Yes,
I mean, we went there, you know, I had to do it. Everyone who goes to there as a surgical field, they want to do FRCS. You know, Canada has FRCS as well. So, I did FRCS from, you know, Edinburgh. Then my wife wanted me to go to London. So I went there and, you know, got FRCS from there. You know, it was a big deal at that time.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, looking back, of course, you know, everything is fine. But I mean, all those were challenges. You want to, you know, get the job. You want to get your kids to a school or, you know, I mean, so all these usual challenges are there in life. But we will come to that. I mean, one of the things you mentioned about, you know, like I mentioned high energy living. And I just wanted to touch a little bit on that. I mean, there is a description by Patanjali. He talks about a physical body. He calls it food body, you know, like food translates into our physical body. Annamaya kosh, you know, in Sanskrit. So then the second body is pranamaya kosh. Prana is life energy. And we just, you know, just pass it by that, you know, it is there in what, you know, the energy body and that forget about it. But we all are born with a different level of energy body. And if you are at a higher energy body level or higher energy level, you are a little more peaceful. You take stress differently. You don't burn out. And there are many people like, you know, even in medicine, they did a research and they say 50% burnout rate, but 50% don't burn out.
Right.
And my hypothesis is that they are born with a higher energy level. And can you do anything about it? So there is a whole thing I'm working on, how to conserve energy, how to create energy. Like meditation, you can create energy. I love your name, Seven Chakras. Many of my meditation in Relax app is chakra-based.
You know,
because different frequency of music will affect different chakras. And so we have created, then we have mantra on chakra as well. So those are meditations created by me. But basically, it is to increase your energy level. And then, you know, the chi practice, you know, Falun Dafa and all those Chinese practices, I mean, they are based on different, I mean, they saw energy differently. But they also, you know, have that feeling. And some of their exercise, if you put your hand together, you can feel the energy going. I mean, in the beginning, you imagine, but then after a while, it seems like you have practiced some of those. And you can feel that thing actually happening. And
so
that energy body is an important element I think we should be bringing into discussions of, you know, your age group too, you know.
Very, very fascinating, very true. I mean, one of the biggest shifts in my life was when I was able to start sensing the energy between my hands. When you create the energy ball, and like you mentioned initially you sort of visualize, but after that it becomes a felt experience. When you bring your hands closer, there's a sense of repulsion. When you and then there's an attraction, and so that is the pranamaya kosha, right?
The pranamaya kosha in our description. They have different description, but you know, it basically, you know, I call it energy body. I mean, but there is and nothing like you have felt it, so you can experience what you know, you can, you know, feel what I'm trying to say.
Yes, absolutely. And that experience made me wonder if this is possible in maybe about 15 minutes, what else is out there, right? Because there are people who are able to see colors, they're able to see their entire energy body and much more. So is there like a step-by-step path to awakening that more people are sensitized to more of the energies out there?
Well, I mean, it's a question of which field you want to go. I mean, you can, if you want to see colors, you can imagine, you know, I mean, brain will create colors. It's a you know, beautiful story. I'll tell you. I mean, I don't know if you have heard it already.
Yeah.
Ramakrishna Paramahansa was a saint, you know, like Vivekananda Guru, right? Ramakrishna Paramahansa. So he will sit in meditation and then he will visualize Ma Kali in front of her.
Yeah.
And that was perfect. But he wanted to go beyond that. He wanted to go... you know, where there is no roop, no shape, no nothing. But he could not go beyond that. So he had a guru, Totapuri. So he came and he said, why don't you bring a sword, you know, and cut Ma Kali? He said, where will I bring the sword from? And he said, well, from the same place where you brought Kali. So after that, he goes into meditation and he brings the sword. So now he has a sword. Now he has Ma Kali. But he says, she's my mother. You know, I mean, she's like, he really felt that she's mother. How am I going to kill her? So Totapuri said, okay, I will cut your, you know, make a cut on your forehead. And in that pain, you try, you know, you do that thing, the final move. And that's what exactly happened. So then he went beyond to Nirakar Samadhi, they call it. I mean, all this sounds like fascinating stories. We don't know really what happened because everything was internal. But it's a good story that, yes, we can imagine and bring in the power of imagination. We can image things as well. And they may be as real as anything.
Very true. I mean, one of the things that you talk about, I guess, which is the key to being able to use your mind to visualize and imagine and create, is silence. So what exactly is intermittent silence? Because intermittent is a very popular word nowadays. You have intermittent fasting. You got intermittent hypoxia, which I'm very fascinated with as a breathwork instructor. Yeah. Then there's intermittent silence. What exactly is intermittent silence?
So basically what it is that intermittent fasting, you are giving your body rest from food. I mean, we sometimes overeat. I mean, you know, it's like, don't listen to the body. We listen to our tongue or taste or mind, but you know. So basically you are giving a break to the body. And in breathing, I mean, I don't want to digress or go away, but you know, breathing techniques, one of them is the hyperventilation, that you wash out the carbon dioxide, right? So basically, there also you are giving your brain a break from, you know, too much narcosis of carbon dioxide. So the same way, intermittent silence is basically you're giving rest to your brain for 10 minutes a day. And how do you do that? So there are four steps to this. One, you close your mouth. So when you close your mouth, all these speech centers and all the thought processes, you are without words. So all those centers in the brain get a break. You know, they don't have to work now. The second one is close your eyes. So all the visual pathway is resting. And then you do silent listening. Silent listening is, and it's really best done in nature. Like I have done it many times when I hike up on a mountain. Mm-hmm. I just lie down there and have my AirPods but basically intermittent silence. I mean, you don't have to do anything. You have the timer. 10 minutes later, there is a music. So It is in the app as well, in our app. So basically, I just do that and just listen to the trees, you know, rustling leaves or, you know, blowing of the wind. And it's just amazing, the feeling. It's one of the hardest, if you call it meditation, but it's one of the hardest exercise because it's easy to do those feel good meditation trips where you go to a beach or go to, you know, ocean and then you come back, you know. But here there is nobody to guide you. It's you for 10 minutes with yourself. Mm-hmm. So the silent listening and then the silent watching of any thought that comes, you just let it just pass by. And if you get attached with one of them, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, once you realize, you go back to, you know, letting it just transit. So there is nothing, you cannot do anything wrong with this. Mm-hmm. But 10 minutes a day, it's amazing. After some time, you will start craving for that 10 minutes because it's so, brain is so cool. You know, it's like one of the lines we use is your 86 billion neurons will thank you if you practice this for 10 minutes. So that's the principle. But it also has many, many side effects, you know, which are good. Like just by closing your mouth for 10 minutes, you realize that you don't have to respond to people immediately. Like email comes and you want to reply it. You create that pause in your response and your response is more effective. Your whole communication becomes more effective.
Right.
And this 10 minute of silence, it starts growing and occupying your whole space. Even when you are not doing it, you just have that feeling that, you know, that you know, peace that you create, it kind of, you know, comes around to you. So those are there. And then for any serious meditation, I mean, I'm not saying there is non-serious, but feel good meditations are, a lot of guided meditations are feel good. They just work on your mind. But many of the, you know, deeper meditations or serious meditations has a component of silence. So once you have practiced this one, then it's easier for you to get into that mode quicker.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And so what would you say the difference? Because I think you said that there's a difference between intermittent silence and meditation. Is there any difference?
Well, a difference is basically how you define it. So if you define meditation as spending any time with yourself, then basically this is one kind of meditation. Mm-hmm. But I define meditation differently. Next step. So basically, intermittent silence opens the door for you to get into meditation. Oh. It's a gateway to meditation. So now if you are doing a chakra meditation, you are letting the music work on your chakras. And then comes the time of silence when you just want to experience everything. That's when suddenly the intermittent silence comes into play. But even if you just practice intermittent silence, new doors will start opening up. And but that happens with vipassana too. Vipassana is also kind of, you know, you intermittent silence combined with breathing, you know, like you mentioned. So you combine all the four things I said, and you just watch your breathing, then it becomes vipassana. So yes, there are different combinations, but I think if you practice 10 minutes of intermittent silence, you, me, or anybody, you are preparing yourself for the best experience for meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I try to distinguish it.
Yeah, it seems silence is definitely a worthy cause to work towards, especially because everyone's got their jobs, they've got their social commitments, they're meeting people, interacting, and there's always this chatter going on. And in the midst of this, I can just imagine a lot of people finding it hard to achieve this mental silence because the chatter seems to be always going on, right? So,
correct. But at the same time, you know, our life is like that. You know, you are flying somewhere. I mean, of course, there is no flight right now, but yeah. we all have to go somewhere. In the flight, you can close your eyes and be 10 minutes silence. I mean, there is nothing, no chanting, no nothing. I mean, it just, or you are waiting at the airport in a lounge or on a chair, you can close your eyes and close your mouth and experience that silence. So it doesn't, you know, it can be built in our lifestyle. And the importance, as you know, as we started, practice was the thing. You know, whichever routine you take, you have to practice to be good at it, you know, or get the most of it.
Absolutely, and I think practice is going to be the key. Whether it's, you know, trying to experience that silence and watch, you know, the thoughts come by and then let it drift once again. In terms of watching, you talk about the concept of watching an emotional storm. So what do you mean by that?
So, yeah, you can take it to the, so four steps I said, four steps are under your control. Emotions are, they just come, right? I mean, you know, when you will be angry, you cannot predict because you will never be angry then. So, so if, you know, if suddenly you become angry and you have practiced intermittent silence for a long time, you can take a pause and just watch that emotion. And you will be surprised that, you know, if the anger arises, you know, in more like energy body. And by the time it comes to the physical body, it is out of control most of the time.
Yeah.
So, once you start watching this, you know, get the art of watching your thoughts and sound, you also start the art of watching the emotions. And I'm using anger, but you could use any of those emotions, negative emotions or even positive emotions. But can you watch them from a little distance? Can you have a little separation between your emotions and yourself? And once you have that, it's interesting, and then you can watch it, you know, next time, even before it arrives to the physical body. You can feel like your whole body is getting tense, or you know, something like vibrations are going on and it's coming on. And I'm not saying you have to do something, but just, you know, just knowing it, just seeing it arise like that, and have that little separation, has miraculous effects.
Action Tribe, are you finding it hard to de-stress and unwind in the midst of this crazy pandemic? Come join us for a soothing, relaxing breathwork session online on Zoom. Now, I do these sessions for our paid members twice a week, and I've received so many powerful testimonials from people who've received a lot of support, comfort, and healing from these sessions. And to show you just how powerful these yogic breathwork practices are, every month I do a breathwork intro workshop for people who'd like to give this a shot. In the past, people have paid anywhere between $10 to $20 for a drop-in, but for a short while, I've decided to make these sessions available for just 50 cents a ticket. And these sessions are live, but you just pay 50 cents. So if you'd like to learn how to calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss using your breath from the comfort of your home, visit mysevenchakras.com/breathworkintro. That's mysevenchakras.com/breathworkintro. I'll see you soon. Interesting. And I think that's great advice as well, because 2020 has been very challenging for many people around the world, whether it's, you know, people's jobs or relationships, and a lot of change in general. And so people can sometimes have these thoughts about a happy relationship that is no longer there, or maybe thoughts about good health that they don't have at the moment, or maybe thoughts about having that job which they recently lost, right? And so what you're saying is, when that emotions or that energy seems to surge before it has reached the level of feeling, you try to distance yourself from that emotion that is surging, and you watch the emotion sort of unfurl and uncoil, and know that you are not the emotion, correct?
Well, yes. I mean, you can see the separation. I mean, it is still you, but, you know, you can see the separation. And that visualization, that looking into yourself, creates some sort of helpful, you know, things inside you that you can deal with it better or, you know, easier. So it's interesting that sometimes just observation, works in a positive way.
Absolutely. And I think the theme for today is that we keep going back to the concept of practice, right? Because it is not easy, as you might agree, to have these surge of emotions coming up and down our body. And no matter how much we try to let go of those emotions, they just come back in the mind. And so for a moment, try to distance yourself from these emotions, because you are not your thoughts, you are not your emotions. You're not even not your body, but that comes back to the practice.
When they, I call them consuming thoughts. Yeah. I mean, some thoughts are consuming it. And probably you have to go through that, you know. It's like when my father died, I mean, for 2 or 3 days, you can't get it off. So say, okay, I will go through this. I mean, sometimes you have to accept some of those things, rather than fight that, I can't fight it, I should be able to fight it. There's nothing to fight. I mean, you can just say, okay, that's fine. This emotion, this emotional storm is going to last for 2 days. You know, it's like sometimes my power goes off in my house. You know, there is a storm outside, power goes off, and we live without power, or we manage somehow, you know, we work around it. The same way, some emotional storms will come and be there, but still, you can watch them. You can, you know, observe them, especially if you have been practicing intermittent silence for some time.
Got it. So I guess the practice helps you for the storm in the future. You might not have a storm right
that's
now.
That's the point. Yeah.
Right? Just like in the morning, I have a cold shower every morning, because I know that there's going to be a version of a cold shower in my life where I have to face the cold. And when that cold comes, when that winter comes, I'm going to be ready. So same mindset, ski? I guess. Sorry?
Do you ski?
I do want to learn to ski. Although I live in Vancouver and this is sort of the ideal place to ski. It's funny, but I don't ski at the moment. And I have a friend who's like a master instructor at Whistler. And I've told him, like, this time, hopefully, if the whole social, you know, the pandemic distancing issues easing out a bit, then I would want to learn how to ski.
good for you.
Yeah. What about you? Do you ski?
I tried, but, you know, it's like, no, I didn't do very well. I fell more than I, you know, I could ski. But my son, my daughter, and, you know, grandkids, they all love skiing. So we spend time.
Oh, that's wonderful. So as a doctor of in the field of urology, what got you interested in creating an app on meditation? I mean, are you drawing from some of your practice in urology to realize that, you know, there is a need for meditation, or what's happening? What's the connection there?
No, the connection was, it evolved, I should say. So this book I wrote, Journey from Life to Life, and I was giving book talks in libraries and other places, and people were asking questions, and then suddenly there was a suggestion that we should do a workshop, because topic of meditation came. So we got some, you know, I had a psychiatrist friend, and one of the reverend, you know, he's a chaplain in National Guard here. So we had a group of some people, brilliant people, minds, six of us got together and said, okay, we will do a workshop, meditation workshop, whole day workshop. And we booked the hall and everything. And then COVID came. So our workshop idea was gone. So then we said, okay, this is tough times. So we'll do some Zoom sessions. So in those Zoom sessions, I started doing these meditations. And you know, we didn't advertise much, but we had 35, 40, 50 people, you know, each session we did. And they all loved it. So I said, okay, why don't we put it in an app? So that's how it evolved. And then we saw Headspace and Calm. And one of the things I realized that, you know, they have good stuff, very good stuff, and they're very popular, but they don't have the deeper stuff. So I thought, you know, because I have had this years of experience, why not put together something? That is, so we have, you know, five categories, and three of them I you know, body, mind, and the flame. I think you are going there anyway, so we can talk a little bit about it. But for sure,
and flame is the right word, because you've said that the goal of, or at least you've implied that the goal of intermittent silence is to open up to individual consciousness, right? So what is your understanding of individual consciousness, and what's stopping us from accessing it right away?
Right. So again, you know, so most work in meditation field that you will see, at least in the Western world, is based on body and mind. So body-mind, you know, equilibrium, body-mind balance, you know, body-mind everything. I'm bringing this third dimension, which is not new, but new to many people. Because when people talk of consciousness, they talk of the bigger consciousness. Individual consciousness is not discussed usually. So I give an example of, so when you say space, the space is anything under the blue sky, or now hyperspace, or something beyond that where there. But think of a house. When you build a house, there is a space inside that. There is a door that opens to the outer space. But the house is a very individualized space. The same way, we all have an individualized or individual consciousness that opens up to the, you know, the universal consciousness. So it's so the physical body may die, mind, part of mind may, you know, exist, but without the body, it's, you know, it doesn't mean anything. But individual consciousness is the one that never dies, and it's not, I'm not saying it's soul or something, because individual consciousness has a level of awareness that we have. And that awareness varies. Buddha will have a different level of awareness. You and I have a different level of awareness. And, you know, it goes very close to what seven chakras are, or what energy body is. You know, the higher the energy body, the higher you are also in your individual consciousness. So the whole premise is that the individual consciousness cannot do anything without the physical body. So that's why it's good to have a healthy body. It's good to have a comfortable body. It's good to have a relaxed body, because then you can work on not only individual consciousness, but also on your mind, which is important as well. So that's why, you know, so healthy, comfortable body and mind. I say a friendly mind, because many people start calling names, you know, like monkey mind.
Yeah. Or, you know, I've had a problem with that name for the longest time. You know, the more you call your mind a monkey mind, the more you become the monkey.
While you have it all your life, at least all your life, or even after that, even after the physical body dies, mind may be with you.
Yeah.
You know? And you are calling it names. I mean, that's not fair, right? You know, so have a friendly relationship with it. You know, yes,
right.
it will go as just, you know, astray at times, but it's still it's your mind. So, but mind has two components, Ajay. One is minding, which all the psychiatry and psychologists study about, right? Minding can be, you know, I call minding because it's an ongoing process. You cannot stop it. It will continue doing something. And it may be positive things, it may be negative things, but minding is something that continues, and that's what we call monkey mind or something. The other one is called mindfulness. Mm. That one is an important part of mind. And I think, you know, this is a component of mind, the mindfulness. And awareness is a component of individual consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And you awareness, won't know.
Can you say that again?
Awareness belongs to individual consciousness.
Okay.
So whenever, you know, like when you meditate and people say, watch your thoughts, who is watching? The watcher is the individual consciousness. That awareness, that brings the awareness. Mindfulness is like a camcorder or recorder, you know. So it's there, but you press the button, then it can record all the events. Mm-hmm. So that's mindfulness. So there is subtle difference, but there is a big, you know, existential difference between mindfulness and awareness. Because awareness belongs to individual consciousness. Mindfulness belongs to mind. It can record anything you want, basically in slow motion, right? I mean, mindfulness is do everything in slow motion so that you record every event consciously. You are doing that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So those three things are, so when you bring in the whole component of individual consciousness, then you can work on it. Then anything you do, any meditation you do, you're not limited to mind body. You want to experience the next level, the flame. And I use the word flame because, you know, you can have a concept of flame smaller or, you know, larger.
Yeah.
And it's very much like a flame.
Yeah, I love the description that you gave about individual consciousness or personal consciousness, in the sense that if you're thinking about something, who's the one who's thinking it? If you're feeling an emotion, who's feeling that emotion, who's having this body? And then you sort of get an idea that there's a witness awareness that is watching this journey unfold, and that's the individual consciousness. So my question to you is, once you are doing these meditations and you are opening up to that individual consciousness, what happens next? What's the result or the byproduct of you opening up to your individual consciousness?
Yeah, we always think of meditation as if it has an end point.
Yeah.
You know, like I have the meditation. It's not. It's an incremental thing that keeps, you know, going.
It's a progress.
It's like when we went into the space, you know, it's like limitless, right? I mean, there is no limit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you go to Moon, then you have to go to Mars. Now they're going to, you know, they have sent a probe to Sun. So the same way, the inner thing, we feel like, you know, outer world is so big, inner should be very small. Inner is not that small. Probably inner is even bigger. So yes, you know, you can have some experience that we call minor explosion. And in that journey, many people get some powers, you know, they get stuck. Like we had, you know, a beautiful person that I came across. His name was Bhutnath Baba.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in medical school in those days. But he had this amazing gift that he developed during his spiritual journey, that he could read your mind, even on telephone. He will know exactly what you are thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had other things as well, but it was, I mean, it's nothing wrong with it, but many people, when they get some of these powers, they stop there and their journey stops there.
Right.
But yes, there are many, many things that can happen, and it's not fair for me to say, Ajay, you will become this powerful because you do this, because I don't know, you know, which way your inner journey is going to take you.
Yeah.
And that's why I have another factor that I bring in here, you know, if it's okay with you, is individual divine, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this journey, you need some help, and there is no other company. I mean, I can't come with you. I can, you know, I can be a fellow traveler, but I'm not in your inner journey. So everybody has, you know, some sort of individual divine that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if somebody is a Christian, he may have, you know, Jesus come with him. You know, he can say, hey, Jesus, come with me. If I am a Hindu, I can say, hey, Hanumanji, please come with me. So I think it should be left open to the individual who is doing this journey as to who his divine is.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
I definitely see what you're saying. And I think it's very important to have this. I think in Hinduism, it's called the Ichha Devata, right? Personal God or personal divine that you respect.
Every village has a Isht Devata. Every household has a Isht Devata.
I think it's so important, because now it's considered cool to push away divinity because you're spiritual and you can draw from everything. But I sense there's a need for, you know, whether it's Jesus or whether it's Rama or Hanuman or some deity that you can draw from in terms of just a spiritual energy, or maybe your guru or somebody like that, right?
Right. Make it individual, but have some connection. That's what I'm saying, because you need that help when you go there.
When you go there. And the thing is also, I've thought about this lately, that, you know, yes, we're spending billions and trillions of dollars for sending man or woman to Mars and outer space. But I think if you really think about it, look at the oceans. We've not discovered 80% of the oceans. And most importantly, we've not discovered most of our mind. Like, we don't know what's happening in there or out there, or how our mind is connected to what is out there. And so probably we need psychonauts, not astronauts, but psychonauts to sort of delve inside and travel where no man or woman has gone before, right? Because
I have the same kind of thoughts that, you know, science should, you know, or somebody should put, you know, effort in this area, a serious effort, the same effort like, you know, Las Alamos effort. I mean, some serious effort should go into this field, because at one time, you know, like rishis, you know, in India, they were scientists. They were basically, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
And the kings and other people were just trying to make sure that they are able to do what they are able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What I like about yoga, Ayurveda, Tantra, is that it's a very experimental, empirical based approach, right? Where the focus, even if you read the text, it's about trying to replicate the same observation that you saw through that meditation, through that tantra, that mantra or yantra. You're trying to replicate the same results. Right. So that's, I like that approach, that mindset. It's very, very amazing.
Now, I am really fascinated by your interest in this, and, you know, the fact that you are doing this, and the seventh chakra name. I love that, you know. Love that you call that.
Yeah, I'm just doing small part.
What? I shouldn't be interviewing you, but why did you name it seventh chakra? You know, is it like cool or?
So there's a story behind seventh chakra. So basically, the idea is that when I awakened spiritually, I tried meditation, silent meditation, but that was not coming naturally to me. And so I went elsewhere and I stumbled upon a video which spoke about visualizing these seven colored chakras. And so I lay down on my bed, and after 15 minutes, I felt a shift. I felt different. I felt really good. And so that opened up something within me. And I said that, what are these chakras and what is this thing that I'm feeling within? But the thing was that when I started my podcast, I did not want it to be about me. Because then I would say AJ's seven chakras. But I said my seven chakras, so that somebody who's listening to the podcast can look in the mirror and say my seven chakras. In other words, they can start their own journey just by looking in the mirror and embarking on the journey that each one of us goes through from the root to the crown, where Shakti meets Shivam, and then you open up to your own purpose or calling. So that was the idea. I want each one who listens to this episode or this show find their own journey and be their own heroes, so to speak.
So here is something I would recommend, you know, at least you try it. So there is a meditation on a Relax app called Power Chakra. And it's one of the mantras, which is a Devi mantra or Shakti mantra. And that one goes, you know, from first chakra to seventh chakra.
Okay.
And it does it three times. I want you to experience that and drop me a note what you think, because that's one of the most powerful. I mean, I wouldn't recommend that to somebody beginners.
Okay.
But if you have experienced some chakra, you know, experience, I think you should at least give it a try.
100%, because so far what I loved the most and what I found really effective when it comes to balancing the chakras is the mantras, bija mantra. So lang, vang, rang, yang.
No, for each chakra there is a mantra.
But this
is a mantra on each chakra, and don't try to recite the mantra outside. Just let it internalize on each chakra.
Okay.
When it does tell you go to first chakra, go to second.
So there you go. I manifest sometimes. I keep it in my mind. I say I need to come across mentors, people who can give me the next step on my journey when it comes to chakra healing or spiritual awakening. And it might just be that I need to do that meditation that you recommended. So I'm going to definitely try it out.
Yeah, I mean. So I don't know how much time you have left. Did you want to touch base on the topic we started on Bhagavad Gita? The result thing. Do you want?
That is my next question, actually. I mean, we've got 15-20 minutes more.
Okay.
But actually, that was a topic that I was going to get into. Firstly, I wanted to start with what influence does Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita have on you? I mean, your name is Krishna, so.
Krishna is my passion. I mean, and Bhagavad Gita is my guru, guide, or whatever. You know, I love Bhagavad Gita, and I have written one book on first two chapters on Gita today, and that's also on Amazon today. Amazon available. But, you know, that just two things. One, you said, you know, as a coach, you know, I always love to, you know, remember the first shloka, and, you know, everyone reads that Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre. That's how it starts. And it fascinates me, really. I mean, really. So they didn't say it is just Kurukshetra. You know, it's not just a place where you act out. Mm-hmm. It's also a place where you have values. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I said dharma means value of the universe, you know, value system of the universe. Mm-hmm. So both are not separate. So, you know, we many times say materialism, you know, leave materialism to go to spiritualism. But Gita doesn't say that. The first two words are that they are both together. So where the war is happening, there is also the value system to be maintained there. The spiritualism is also there. So, you know, even today, you know, election is happening in USA.
Yeah.
But still, the country has to have a value system as well. So yes, you know, people are going to vote and everything, but still, that is important. Otherwise, you know, if the value system is disrupted, then, I mean, you can have elections and you can have high energy people, but that high energy is channeled in a different way.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting. And the quote that comes to my mind right now, based on what you shared, is the quote that says, wherever you go, there you are, right? So it's not about separating and leaving your spirituality at home, but it's bringing your spirituality to everything that you do. Your work, your school, your relationships, everything needs to reflect your spirituality. So it's not just if you do yoga on the mat, it's everywhere. Right.
Yeah, your peace should travel with you, right? So,
that's deep.
No, but that's true, right? If you are peaceful, peace should travel with you, right? I mean, when it comes to, you know, the shloka that everybody says that, you know, do your karma and forget about the result.
Mm.
I have a little different understanding. I'm not saying they're totally wrong because they explain very nicely how they do. But I say, my understanding is that the shloka doesn't say that don't worry about result. It simply says that the karma, your action is in your hands. Result is not in your hands totally. So then who's, so the way I see it is that, okay, you do your, you know, karma, you do your action, but there is more to it than just the karma. And what are those more things? And if you see, you know, Mahabharata or Krishna's life, he does those more things.
Mm.
So he makes sure that Arjun is trained well. He makes sure that Arjun has all the weapons. He even makes sure that other people don't have the weapons that could destroy Arjun or Pandavas. So there is a very nice shloka in Gita in 18th chapter, which I have a whole chapter on in my book, you know, and that is Five Pillars of Success.
Mm-hmm.
So I put this shloka, which says, you know, do your karma and the karma is in your control, not the result. And the Five Pillars of Success, which says that, you know, the five pillars he mentions is, first one is the platform. You know, it's like the same person on a president's platform can do a different job than as a businessman. Or Narendra Modi as chief minister can do, you know, has limitations, but as prime minister, he can do more. So that platform is important. Then the vyakti, you know, the person, quality of the person is important. You know, the same platform, if you have, you know, Hitler there, it may be a different ballgame. Right? Or Duryodhan there is a different ballgame. So that person is important. And then Karanam means, you know, the tools. Like, you know, USA has got, you know, different destructive weapons than many other countries. So it can achieve more, you know, power or whatever because of that. So, you know, it could be medicine. I may have the robot that I can use, whereas some hospitals may not have the robot. So I can, you know, get better results because of that. And then he says that, you know, prithak vidham means, you know, you try different approaches. So if for a country, you know, you can say, okay, I'll put a bargain, you know, ban on some things, or economic ban or social ban or whatever, you know, those things. You can do a sports ban. So you can use different styles and different approaches, but fifth one is divine. So even in Mahabharata, you know, Hanuman is on that, you know, the chariot that Arjun is, you know, riding, and that's, you know, that's a divine denoting divine. And then there was before he started, even Ram, when he goes to conquer Ravan, he does Shiv Sthapana in Rameshwaram, there is a place. So all these things didn't just happen just like that, because they do, So your action is not the only thing that will get you the result. You have many other things to take care of, and you should take care of those things. That's how I see it.
Right. Interesting. So it's not just about your actions, but it's about creating the right environment that is conducive for results.
Right.
Whether it's a spiritual, divine environment or whatever it is. So not just about your actions, but there are some other factors as well. Now, for those who are listening and are wondering what is Mahabharata, do you mind giving like a quick 10-second or 15-second understanding of what the Mahabharata is and what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, in short, it was kind of a world war of its time, which was happened 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was a king Duryodhan who was kind of the bad guy, and the Pandavas, which were five brothers, were kind of the good guys. And Krishna, if you denote him as a divine, he took the side of the good guys. And there was a war and many people died. And of course, you can say it was all bad. Why the war happened and yeah. could have been avoided. But sometimes those things are needed. And it's the last resort, of course. And, unfortunate. But sometimes good things come out of those things.
And what would you say is your favorite scene from the Mahabharata? Or maybe your favorite dialogue or, you know, something that's happening?
Well, it's a favorite is interesting because Krishna character interests me.
Yeah.
Like Ram is an ideal person.
Yeah.
I cannot, yes, I can respect him. I can, worship him, but I cannot think of becoming him. But Krishna does fascinate because he lives like you and me. So he makes a promise that he will not, use a weapon in that war. But he breaks his promise.
Mm.
And, there are explanations of why he breaks his promise. But it's just interesting that he's not going to stay into the mold that you and I can mold him. Like Ram is very much, you can say, ideal person, how he can live. You can criticize him for some of his actions, but he's predictable. Krishna is totally unpredictable. And is still fascinating, is still respectable. Mm-hmm. And they are two different characters. And that scene really, breaking a promise, you might say, why do you want to remember that? But, it's like more being, he was more on a human level as well as on a higher plane.
Mm-hmm. And I guess those qualities make people feel closer to him, closer to Krishna than to Rama. Because I know people call Rama the Man Maryada Purush, right?
Right.
Because in every juncture of his life, he did something that was based on what is right and not necessarily what is good for him, even if it meant, staying away
leaving
from
Sita.
His wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so for somebody who's on the spiritual journey, somebody who has recently awakened to a new way of living, which is spiritually, what are one or two questions that somebody who's on this path needs to ask of themselves?
Well, I think, as we talked about, beginning, he has to put it in the routine of life, because sometimes we do certain things, we do it for a month, and then we, it just drops out on the wayside. So that a routine is important, and I always say that if you do a meditation same time, same place, and same kind of same routine, that place starts waiting for you, your body starts waiting for you, and I think the whole atmosphere just creates itself so that you do it routinely, and the effect is always compound. It's not like additive effect. It's like more like a potentiation, or just logarithmic rather than just a linear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And One of the things about meditation, of course, you know, you this taking it a little further is you can, you, me, or, you know, whoever can do so far. I mean, we can go so far in meditation. I mean, basically, in meditation, we talk as if we are doing something. Basically, we are creating a situation where meditation happens, like sleep. You know, switch off the light, you lie down in the bed. But sleep comes to you. You can't force sleep on you, right? Yeah. So the same way meditation happens to you, you create a surrounding or chakra or music or whatever. But then there comes a point where it's like a Buddhist call it Sotopan, you know, like a stream rider. So, you know, there is a river that's flowing and you jump in the river and then the stream takes you over. So there comes a point where, you know, when I said the doors, new doors start opening, suddenly a wave comes and takes you away. And those experiences are a little bigger explosions than minor explosions.
Right.
So that's the, so yeah, I don't think that everything is in your control or my control. But yes, we can at least start the journey, start the practice on a routine basis.
Yeah.
And then even Buddha had to wait for it to happen, you know.
Yeah, I love the imagery that you conjured up by talking about the wave. Because a while back, I had a conversation with a Qigong teacher who said something similar. And in Qigong, you have you talk about where attention goes, energy flows, right?
Yeah.
And so what he said is when it comes to Qigong or Tai Chi, you can try to swim in the ocean and you can swim against the wave is going to come crashing against you. Or if you're really experienced and you're smart, you can wait for the wave and then ride the wave. That way, you're expending less energy. You're using the entire tidal force of the entire ocean to go towards where your energy or your focus wants to direct it. That's the ultimate. But you got to wait for the wave.
Interesting. And sometimes it will come for you.
Interesting. And so I'm very curious about something that you wrote. You said, while many see birth, life, and death as a finite series of events in a period prescribed by time, you said that Asian-based views are far more likely to see the human experience as mere stopping points along an eternal journey, one that has no beginning and no end. So my question to you is, as a doctor who has progressed in your career based on empirical evidence, right, based on your decisions are basically empirical, experimental, do you sometimes find it hard to believe that the human experience is an eternal journey, one that has no beginning or end? So how do you come into terms with this?
Well, we know that we have a beginning and end. We know we are born and we die.
Yeah.
But we don't know what happened before and what happened after.
Yeah.
And if we think that this is it, you know, the unseen world is bigger, much bigger than, you know, the world we see. And so we are manifestations, you know, in for a short period of time in the eternal existence.
Yeah.
And we sometimes like to think that we control our, you know, beginning and end. We know that we don't control beginning and end. So yes, it's an ongoing journey, but one thing is sure, you know, while I'm here, I want to do everything well. I want to use my times, you know, as precious as, you know, every moment. And I want to be in that journey where the individual consciousness level rises. I contribute to the society. I leave, you know, as you said, a legacy, you know, it's like, and legacy is in many terms, different ways. Even if you leave legacy of thought waves, different thought waves, you have done service. I mean, they may not have, like, I mean, in case of Buddha, I mean, I think he became, you know, the Buddhism became really alive after Ashoka, you know, I mean, many years after him.
Yeah.
But the thought process and everything that he has, you know, given existed, right? So
very true.
I mean, yeah, so it's I mean, there is no short answer to your, you know.
That's a very profound deep question. Yeah. And so I guess what you're saying is, you know, the very fact that we just magically wake up as a from fetus level to baby level, and then we miraculously just lose consciousness. There has to be something before the full stop and after the full stop. I mean, you can't just cease to exist.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a hard question, right? It's the hard problem of consciousness, in a way that where do you think consciousness stops, or does it stop even? But I guess what you're also saying is, between these brackets, after we are born and before we die, we got to do the best that we can to leave a legacy, or maybe even leave a work that's going to be useful for the next generation or so.
Right. I think that's what is our higher purpose of life, you know?
Mm. Very interesting.
I mean, we can come and live and die. I mean, that's actually, I'll tell you one of the, I mean, this book talk was inspiring to me, a revelation. I mean, I learned so much from people. So
yeah.
One of the nurses came to me one day and said, she had a relative. And she said, I want to share this story with you. I said, okay, go ahead. So this relative was sick, you know, he was not that old, but, you know, in the 70s. But he was very sick and he was kind of dying. And one of the relatives went close to him and said, so what do you think about your life? You know, how did you do in your life? And he opened his eyes, looked at her and said, wasted. So, you know, he had alcohol issues, he had drug issues, and, you know, he's going. But I think I don't want to, I mean, the lesson I learned from that is that I don't want to be in a situation where I can say I wasted my life.
You don't want to have that sense of regret.
Sense of that feeling. I mean, I don't know, regret or kind of. Yeah, you're right. So why not do everything I can do, and then I can say, okay, I did my share of whatever years I spend here, you know.
And talking about life, you've written that in the greater the goal, the greater the difficulties. So what made you come to that conclusion when it comes to life?
Well, I mean, greater the goal, greater the difficulties, but, you know, greater you achieve as well. I mean, maybe I didn't put that one there.
Okay.
No, but yeah, I mean, we all should have great goals. I mean, you know, that's how we should. I mean, if we have, you know, our goal is to just have a, you know, banana every day, that's one goal. But, you know, if you have a goal that you will share banana with 10 other people, I mean, that's it increases your whole heart, you know, space, and everything kind of expands, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is not the greatest example of, you know, great goal, but any goal that you have, it can be multiplied. I mean, that's the thing. And the world a little better place than you came in, you know.
That's so true. I mean, you don't need to end hunger or find the cure to malaria, but even if you're leaving the place a little bit better than you came, then that could also be a noble and worthy goal.
True. But everyone has, you know, there are people who are ending malaria. There are people who are ending hunger.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I are doing something different. So we all, you know, all together, you know, it becomes a better world.
Yes. Togetherness is what makes a difference. And one of the things I've heard is a goal called a moonshot goal. I'm not sure if you've come across that term, which is a goal so big that the moment you think about it, you're like, you gasp in awe because you feel that's so much beyond what you think is possible for you. And I think sometimes it's good to have these huge goals which really pull you in every way possible. And maybe you don't achieve that goal, but then along the pursuit of achieving that goal, you're so much different now.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, I mean, you know, moonshot goals, you can, you know, it may sound, you know, but what JF Kennedy said, you know, he wanted to go to send man to moon. At that time, there was no technology. They didn't know how. No. But, you know, that dream became possible, right? Mm-hmm. Or Modi now says, you know, 5 trillion economy in certain period of time.
Yeah.
And I mean, many people say that, you know, is he crazy? But that's the thing. I mean, if you have big goals for wherever you are, you know, that you can ask people to reach, then, you know, things might materialize, you know.
It's very true. And I love that you say that we should not differentiate materialism from spiritualism, right? I mean, both need to go hand in hand.
I want both, right? Yeah.
Both, right? You need to have that platform. You need to have those tools. You need to have that consciousness. And then you can actualize your journey on earth. So Action Tribe, if you're listening to this episode, ask yourself, what is my moonshot goal? What do I truly want to do that if I say right now is going to really give me the goosebumps? Because I know I can do it, but at the same time, I'm kind of scared. Krishna, what is your moonshot goal? I know you are a high achiever. You've done so many things in your life. You have patients whose lives you've changed, and now you're embarking on a new journey. So what would you say is your moonshot goal? What is the kind of legacy that you want to leave on this earth?
Well, what I have been telling here, you know, in my, you know, thoughts and discussion is that could U.S. become the spiritual destination of the world? Because there is all the infrastructure is here, you know, I mean, here, U.S. or Canada. And I mean, I have been, say, you know, Appalachian Trail, it's thousands of miles and there are huts, you know, at every short distances that you can stop and have beer and have, you know, sandwich and sleep. Why can't you just meditate there? I mean, that's what India did, you know, Himalayas, you know, you go and you have stops there. I mean, there was, just think of that probably as a hike, long hike, you know, but we don't think of it as a hike there. We think of it as a Tirthyatra.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's what people used to do. People used to walk before the roads, you know. So that's one of the things. I don't know how it will happen, but that's one of my moonshot.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I also like the more that I am connecting the dots between yoga and modern science, I'm getting to know that all these yogis, they lived the lifestyle that was not only good for spirituality, but also for wellness. Because if you think about it, they were having cold water baths in the water. They were eating berries and really nutritious food, or sometimes not even eating that much food, meditating a lot and exposing them to cold. And as you know, there are so many benefits.
And walking was built in their lifestyle.
And walking was built into the lifestyle. How amazing. Yeah. So I love your goal. And in any way, if I can support it, I'm more than happy to do so. I live in British Columbia, so not sure if you've been here, but there are so many beautiful things about this province and places to explore, to hike, to swim, to canoe, to paddle, to meditate. So there's a lot of space here.
Yeah. I'm sure there is,
So thanks a lot for sharing. Sorry, were you saying something?
No, thank you. And it's very nice to meet you.
Thank you. Action
and
Tribe,
your audience.
And I'm sure our listeners loved hearing what you shared as well. And you did share a lot. Action Tribe, I hope you enjoyed today's session as we move along. I know many of you have this vision deep within you. Maybe you want to start a new career, launch a new business, or embark on a new passion. Or maybe you have that moonshot goal that you really want to achieve. Whenever you take action, you expect results, right? And as we're learning today, sometimes the results might take time, a lot of more time than you initially expected. And just not seeing those immediate results can bring you down, make you lose hope, or even worse, it can affect your health. Now, monitoring your results is important. It's a good habit, but remember that not everything is within your control. Just look at what is happening right now with COVID and this crazy coronavirus pandemic that has almost every area of our life affected: jobs and schools and vacations and relationships and more. And I know that many of you were really depending on 2020 for the results that you've been working so hard for. But like I said, not everything is our control. What is within our control is the work that you do, the actions that you take, and the conditions that you create for that wave that is going to come into your life, and how you manage your energy as well. And just like it is written in the Bhagavad Gita, you have the right to work, but for the work's sake only. You have no right to the fruits of the work. Desire for the fruits of the work must never be your motive in working. Do the work, create the conditions, whether it's emotional or even spiritual, but wait for the wave, have the patience. And with that being said, it's now time for the last round for today, the wisdom round. Four questions so that our listeners can take note and take action. So Krishna, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received in your life?
So one, as a doctor, the best piece of advice was a Scottish mentor of mine. You know, he sat me down and as if he was going to give me some big, you know, lesson or something, and just says, don't take anything casual in surgery. So that was one of the best advice. I didn't understand at that time. It took me some time to understand, but it's a very deep, deep advice for anybody in any serious work, especially life and death.
Wonderful. And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone living or dead, who would it be?
I was too busy and my father was too busy. So, you know, I would probably like to spend a little bit more time with my father, you know.
And what is that thing you do in the morning? Sorry. So basically, you'd like to spend more time with your father, right? My next question was, what is that one thing you do in the morning or in the evening before you sleep that has improved the quality of your life?
It's funny. The answer for both is a meditation. So when I go to sleep, I sleep with a meditation. Of course, recently I've been doing Om Chakra meditation, which is one of the meditations on that Relax app, which is basically, it's a very nice Om sound which goes through all the chakras. I won't do the power chakra in this before sleep because I won't be able to sleep because it's so powerful.
Okay.
So in the morning, I do power chakra or I do intermittent silence.
Got it. And what is that one book that you would like to recommend for our listeners today?
Well, I have to say Journey from Life to Life. So apart from that, there is a book, you know, I love that book. And if you get a chance, you should read it. And it's called Hidden Mysteries by Osho. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a wealth of information there.
Wonderful, mystical information. But I've just written that down. We'll have that in the show notes as well. Action Tribe, would you like to receive this book for free? That's right. Audible is offering all our listeners, that is you, Action Tribe, one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, which means you'll get the opportunity to listen to a book as opposed to read a book. And you can choose any book you want from their large library of books. All you need to do is go to my7chakras.com/freebook. Once again, that's my7chakras.com/freebook. And when you have an audiobook, it can be on your phone. You don't have to carry a physical book. And you can listen to it just like a podcast, wherever, in transit, at work, or at home. my7chakras.com/freebook. So Krishna, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really amazing to connect with you, learn about the wisdom of the Gita and everything that you shared about today. Before you go, tell us one thing that you are grateful for and how can we find more about you online and how can listeners download your app?
So relax.org, and relax is with 2X, relaxx.org. You can go there and you can download from there on Android or iPhone app. Okay. And that's great. And my personal website is krishnauniverse.com. And do visit that and you might find some wisdom there.
Wonderful. We'll have both these links up in the show notes. Action Tribe, download the app, go to relax.org. There are two X's in the domain name and also krishnauniverse.com. Are you active on Instagram at all?
I am, but trying to get more active, you know, as I go along. But
KBHA. KBHA?
Okay. K for Krishna, BHA.
Perfect. So all of you listeners, go on Instagram, search for Dr. Krishna Bhatta's Instagram handle, KBHA. Also, tag me at My7Chakras after taking a screenshot of this episode so that we both can share your story with our community and we can spread the word. As next steps, if you'd like to discover the power of breathwork, and if you'd like to join in the discussion that's happening in our official group right now, go to my7chakras.com/tribe. And I'd love to connect with you one-on-one. If you have any feedback, if you have any questions or comments, go to or email me at aj@my7chakras.com. Seven is a word. So aj@my7chakras.com. Krishna, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode, talking to us about the power of intermittent silence and awakening our individual consciousness, and also taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my7chakras.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.